Arjuna was stunned at the end of the 14th chapter. Shri Krishna, as if served a googly, you know, in the language of cricket. Ball was supposed to be a leg spin, it became an off spin, and he didn't know how to handle it. It was a curveball in the language of baseball, where he suddenly, towards the end, introduced these three words, unconditioned, conditioned, and jagat. This is the very essence of the Upanishads. So the Upanishads are the cows, and Shri Krishna is the cowherd, and the milk of the cow, the essence of the Upanishads, is the Bhagavad Gita, which was given to Arjuna and through Arjuna to all of us. So this knowledge, which we talked in detail last week, the last verse of the 14th chapter, where he talks about the unconditioned consciousness, conditioned consciousness, and jagat. The unconditioned consciousness, I won't go into detail because we spent 1 hour talking about that. Those who wish to read or hear more about it, you can go to the website firstpower.info, and there is a detailed commentary. But the unconditioned consciousness he talked about is the Brahman, the substratum of the whole universe, which is the support from which the whole universe originated. The conditioned, just to summarize, is Ishvara. Ishvara is the creator, sustainer, destroyer, Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh, that creates and maintains this whole universe. And that consciousness, the unconditioned Brahman, when it works through the total Maya, the total ignorance, the whole world appears. And that whole world is called Jagat. Jagat means the world. So the entire universe in the Jagat also is me. You know, me, this body, mind, and intellect. And this whole world of objects, emotions, and thoughts, and this ego, the perceiver, feeler, and thinker, all this is called Jagat. So everything appears because this total consciousness functions through the total ignorance, Maya, and creates this universe. And when it functions through the individual ignorance or Maya or Vasanas, it creates me, the ignorant being, who does not know who I am, but through the knowledge of the teacher, tries to study that. So Arjuna is stunned, he's confused. And Krishna sees that Arjuna's eyes are glazed over, because this knowledge is, even for us, you know, when we hear about unconditioned condition, it becomes difficult to comprehend. And this idea will be repeated again in the 15th chapter. Towards the end, Krishna will again emphasize this concept. So if those who are not clear, we will be doing that again. And Krishna sees that Arjuna, at this moment, his mind is very quiet. He's stunned. He's in silence. He has not realized the truth, but his mind is ready to receive this knowledge, because that's what the teacher looks at, that what is the student's status, and then the teacher begins to speak. And quite a few of the chapters, we find that Arjuna asks a question, like in the 12th chapter, you know, what is this formless and form, and which is better, which path is superior, and so on. Evam satata yuktaye bhaktastvam paryupasate, and so on. So here Arjuna is quiet, he has no question, but Krishna sees in his eyes, there is a question in his eyes, which is not on his lips, which all of us have this question as to what is this world? You know, why was it created? How was it created? We talked a little bit about it last week, but this will be expanded more in the 15th chapter. Who am I? What is my relationship to this world? What is my relationship to God? And if there is an unconditioned consciousness, which is the source of all, how can I reach it? How can I know it? So if there is an unconditioned consciousness, how can I reach it? How can I know this? So all these questions arise in all of us. And Arjuna represents the seeker, the sincere seeker, who at this moment in the middle of the battlefield does not know what is his duty. And so he seeks the Lord's grace. He approaches the Lord. He says, Shishyasteham shadhi mam tvam prapanna. I am your disciple, O Lord. You please teach me, because I don't know what is my duty. And we all approach the Bhagavad Gita with the same idea. Oh Lord, I don't know who I am. I don't know what is my purpose in life. Please teach me. And we are thankful, of course, to Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda for his exhaustive commentaries, which help us to study this subject. So, one of the beautiful videos that Gurudev has made, and which was his talk he gave to the United Nations called Logic of Spirituality, which is also available in the office. It's a very beautiful video. And the essence of that is, of course, there are a lot of points covered, but the one that hit me the most, there is a cause and effect relationship. No effect can be without a cause. If there is a child, there has to be a cause, mother and father. If there is a pot, there has to be a cause, and that is clay. If there's ornaments, there has to be a cause, that is gold. So no effect can appear without a cause. The second point that he makes in this beautiful talk is that he says that when from the effect you remove the cause, first of all, what is the effect? The effect is the cause maybe appearing in a different shape and form, like gold is in a solid bar, but gold ornaments are all different colors and different shapes. The mud is brown, but the pots are beautiful colored, red, blue, green, with all the designs and all the shapes and forms. So you may not recognize that brown piece of mud in this pot because it has been covered with all this beautiful paint and colors and shape and all. So the cause may be hidden, but it is there. And if from the effect, if you remove the cause, nothing remains. Like you go to the goldsmith and goldsmith says, okay, I'll sell you the gold ornaments, but I'm not going to sell you the gold. I'll take the gold out and then I'll sell you the gold ornament. You'll say, what is that? You know, from the ornaments, when you remove the gold, nothing will remain. From the mud pots, if you remove the mud, nothing remains. So when we see this whole universe, I see myself, I see the trees, plants, birds, animals, fish. These are all effects. These are all something I can see, hear, smell, taste, and touch. I can perceive it. But what is the cause of that? That is number one. I want to know, and then they say there is God. Okay, that everybody knows. Even a first grade child, if you tell him who made the world, he'll say God. So that's nothing new. But the second point of this talk was that the effect is nothing but the cause in different shapes and forms, right? Just as mud in different shapes and forms becomes a pot. So God alone is there in different shapes and forms because he is the cause. If he is the cause, then he has to be in all the effects. He cannot be separate from the effects, like mud cannot be separate from the parts, gold cannot be separate from the instrument. So he is there, or she or it. That's why in Sanskrit, Brahman is used as a neuter, as it, because it's neither male or female. It is the consciousness, the substratum, which appears in this whole universe as all the men and women, the children, the birds, plants, fish, even the rocks, even the stones, everything is that one Brahman, that one consciousness. And from this effect, if you remove the cause, nothing remains. So from this universe, if you were to remove Brahman, if you were to remove God, the Lord, this universe becomes non-existent. And as we had studied last week, the reason we don't see the Lord, even though he's there in everything, he's there in the space, there in the table, in the glass, in the people, is because we have, through the ignorance of Maya, through our ignorance, he has concealed himself, and we project our own likes and dislikes because of our own vasanas. We project this world as him, her, shim, she, me, but a wise person sees the one consciousness everywhere. That is what distinguishes us from Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda or Shankaracharya or Jesus or Buddha, because they could see the oneness and they have spontaneous love and non-violence and compassion because they see themselves in all of them. So that is the importance of this cause and effect relationship, that whenever we see an effect, we always want to see, find the cause. And cause hunting is the fundamental nature of human being. Like when the apple fell on, was a Newton, he wanted to know, why did the apple fall down? Why didn't it go up? And with that, through that study, we came with the law of gravitation. That was very beneficial. So cause hunting has been the fundamental pursuit of humans ever since they first started. You know, when they would see thunder, they wanted to know who is this God that is, you know, sending thunder and lightning. Even when in their ignorance, even in the American Indians, we find that all these gods, you know, who, so they wanted to know the cause of everything. So then the question comes, why should we study the Bhagavad Gita? Why are we here? Why should we know about God? Why should we know about cause? What is the benefit of that? What, how am I going to get anything out of that? And that is the very, very important question. I was reading a commentary of Swami Chinmayananda in a different context in the Ishavasya Upanishad, and he very beautifully describes it. He says that human beings are four personalities. We are not one. We are actually four people in one. You know, people say Gemini are two. I am a Gemini, but most of us are not only two. We are four in one. How are we four in one? I am the body, so I am the physical personality. The body, that is the physical personality. I am the mind. The mind is the emotional personality, the feeling, the thinking. Not the thinking, but the feeling and the, you know, and the one that gets hurt, the one that wants joy and sorrow. And then the intellect or the thinking capacity, the one that decides, the one that discriminates. So I'm the physical personality, the mental, the intellectual, and the spiritual. I'm also the spirit, and I want the spirit to know who this spirit is, who God is. And what happens is that each of these four personalities wants to be happy, wants to be satisfied. When you ask anybody, what is your goal of life? Everybody will say, I want to be happy. Nobody will say, I'm here to be unhappy. You know, even we are in this class, hopefully we'll all leave here happy and not unhappy. Oh, I wasted my 1 hour. So I hope that doesn't happen. So everybody wants to be happy. And what we want to do, we want to satisfy all. I want my body to be happy. I want comfort. You know, I want a nice house, nice car. I want clothes, jewelry. I want good food. I want physical comforts, physical satisfaction. Nice pillow, comfortable to sleep. So all that. So physically I want, and all the sense pleasures of the body I want to enjoy. Then mentally, you know, I want people to love me. You know, if somebody says, I don't love you, you know, I don't like that. So I want to be loved. I want to have joy in my life. I don't want sorrow. I don't want suffering. Intellectually, we all want to know. You know, I want to know what's happening in the world. I want to know what's happening with that lander that landed on planet and that comet. You know, such an amazing feat is mind-boggling. How at, you know, so many billion miles away, the comet is traveling at some 84,000 miles, and that lander, and then how they do it, it's mind-boggling. And it's sending images. So I want to know what's happening. Every morning, you know, you read the internet. And then also intellectually, I want success. I want, you know, I don't want to fail. I want to accomplish. And then spiritually, I want to be happy. I want to know who I am, who is God. And what we find is that the whole world is engaged in providing this for us. The economists, you know, they run the economy of the country to create maximum wealth so that the people may have wealth. The politicians, they want to run the country if, you know, if they're doing a good job so that the country may do well, the people may prosper. The industrialists, they are manufacturing newer and newer products. Every day you have new iPhones and then new, you know, computers, new models of cars, new clothes, new everything, new and new styles. Why? So that the physically the person may be happy, the mentally. The new and new foods, newer and newer drinks. So everybody, the whole society is engaged in providing happiness for the people. Of course, they get a price for it. But the idea is that if I sell something that will make the people happy, they'll buy it and I'll become happy. You know, when I'm a businessman, when I sell a lot, then I become. So I'm creating happiness for others and trying to create happiness for myself. So all these four personalities want to be happy. It's not that one can say, it's okay, my body can be hurting, you know, but as long as my mind is happy and I'm successful, no, and I'm not. If my body is hurting, I'm in pain, I cannot be happy. How can I be happy when my body is suffering? Or my body is okay, but, you know, people are so mean to me. I have so much stress in my life. when you have stress, no matter how comfortable a bed you might be sleeping, you may be in a king's palace, you're not going to be able to sleep. So you want physical happiness, you want mental happiness, we want intellectual happiness. And then they are all competing with each other. Suppose a person is intellectually very successful and studying and reading Upanishads and Gita, is very happy. The mind says, what is this? It's boring. Why are you here studying the Upanishads? You know, this is a boring topic. Let's go out and have fun. You know, it's a sunny day outside. Let's have a picnic. Or the body saying, you know, come on, you know, let's go to the coast and we'll enjoy the, you know, good food. There are some good restaurants. So the three are all the time competing, and never can you satisfy all. You satisfy one, the other one gets starts complaining. You satisfy this one, the other one. And if you are having a lot of fun and joy, the intellect is saying, you know, this is a waste of time. You're in this party and you're spending 3-4 hours. We could be doing something useful, you know. So none of these. So how can I do, how can we satisfy all? You know, the economists have tried, the politicians have tried, the industrialists have tried, the businessmen have tried. They all failed. But religion or spirituality gives us the answer. Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda says that when the spirit is satisfied, when you start growing spiritually and start understanding who am I, start evolving spiritually and growing towards the higher path, all three of these will very quickly fall in line. You say, how? Because once you understand that you are that spirit, you are not this consciousness, then even if the body is suffering, even if the body is hurting, the person doesn't get affected. I remember even if the mind, if there's a lot of stress, when I'm spiritually evolving, when I'm in meditation or when I'm going in prayer or going upwards, then physical discomforts and mental stresses do not bother that individual. He or she knows that in life there's going to be physical problems. I'm going to have some physical discomfort. There may be some ups and downs. But there is one person who comes to our Thursday meditation class, and very interestingly, after the class he came and talked to me. He said that I have a lot of aches and pains in my body. And also when I go to work, I have a lot of stress. It's a very stressful job. But he says on the day I meditate, because he has been meditating for about 2 years, he says when I go to my work, I'll go to work at 6 o'clock in the morning when nobody has come, and it's very quiet, and then I meditate for 40 minutes before anybody comes to work, and then I find that my physical discomfort goes away. That whole day I don't even have any body pain. And my work becomes so peaceful. No matter, people are stressful, people are giving me problems. But on the day when I don't go to work early and I don't meditate, I experience all that. So he says, what is that? Is it just a coincidence? Or is it truly? And I told him, it's not a coincidence. It is well known that when you are in deep prayer or when you are in deep meditation, in fact, there is an incident in Saint Teresa's life, Saint Teresa of Avila. She's a great saint from Italy. And it is said that one time she was in deep prayer, and she was in such a deep prayer, she went into the church and she was holding a candle to offer to the Lord. And she stayed in that for so many minutes, the candle actually burnt. It burnt, and actually her fingers got burnt. She didn't notice a thing, and the whole finger was, you know, charred because the flame was so strong. But the point is that, not that, you know, one should do that, but the point is that once you are in that higher state of consciousness, then physical, mental, or intellectual discomforts do not bother you. Secondly, what happens is that once you are growing spiritually, then your physical, mental, and intellectual needs automatically reduce. You know, that is called vairagya, that is called detachment, where you then realize that what is more important is, there's another incident, this lady who comes to our meditation class was telling us. She says that she used to love to shop, and she said, I used to go to the mall 3 times a week, go to Valley Plaza and just buy things whether I need it or not. And she would shop and just buy. And she said since she has been meditating for 2 years, she hasn't gone to Valley Plaza. Please don't go and tell the mall, otherwise they'll be angry with me. I'm taking away their... No, but the point is that automatically your desires reduce. Once your desire for the higher comes, then yeah, it's not that useless. All of us are going to become sannyasis and leave the world and put on orange. But you develop an attitude of comfort. Okay, physical comfort is there, very good. If it's not there, okay, I go to the doctor, and if I get well, fine. If not, I'm still okay. If mentally somebody says I love you or doesn't say I love you, I'm still okay. Someday I'll have success, someday I'll have failure. But if I am spiritually evolving, then I am still okay. So that feeling that I am okay through, in Sri Krishna in the 12th chapter, he says, Sama shatrau cha mitre cha tatha manap manayoho shitoshna sukha dukheshu samasanga vivarjitaha. He says, my devotee is one who is sama shatrau cha mitre cha. There may be people who love him and people who hate him. He's balanced in both situations. Manap manayoho. Somebody praises me, somebody criticizes me. That's the nature of the world. I cannot make everybody happy every time. But I am fine. I am sama. Shitoshna sukha dukheshu. And in the heat and cold, in the body, one day there will be heat, other day there will be cold. One day healthy, one day unhealthy. One day joy, one day sorrow. But one who is firmly established in the truth can deal with life's fluctuations. You and I, when we get a problem, you know, we get so frustrated and so unhappy. But one who is spiritually evolved, or even evolving, that's what Swami Chidananda once told me. I asked him, how do I know that I'm spiritually progressing? He says that if something that used to bother you doesn't bother you anymore, then you can say that you are progressing. This person or this situation, I used to get very upset. But if I can remain equanimous in that same situation, that is the benefit of knowing who God is. That's why the 15th chapter is called Purushottama Yoga. And why is a whole chapter given to this subject of who is God and who am I? Because our intelligence is limited. Our thinking capacity is limited. Through our thinking capacity, I cannot grasp this highest truth. It's not possible intellectually. It is not possible. So they say, then why are we here studying? We are here to study because through the study, it can tell us in which direction I should take my mind and intellect so I can reach that highest truth. That highest truth cannot be intellectually grasped, cannot be described, cannot be put in words. Even whether it's the Gita or the Bible or the Upanishads, none of them can adequately describe the truth. They can all point the direction in which one should go. But then how do I realize the truth? How do I know it? So Swami Chidananda says, in your deep silence of meditation, you will arrive at that truth. Nobody can tell you, nobody can lead you, no guru can guide you. No, guru can guide you, but guru cannot take you. But in your own deep silence of contemplation, when your mind is completely still and your vasanas have been reduced, your desires have been reduced, your mind is still, you will experience that. And that actually you are. But we, not knowing who am I go through all life's problems. And people ask, who are you? And we'll say, I'm a man. Or a woman. I'm not asking your sex. Who are you? Okay, well, I'm an Indian or an American or a Chinese. I'm not asking your nationality. Who are you? Oh, I'm the son of so-and-so. But that is your relationship to your parents. We're not asking who are your parents. Okay, I'm the father of so-and-so, mother of so-and-so, husband of so-and-so, wife of so-and-so. Those are all your connections, your relationships. That is not you. That is your relationship to your family. Okay, you know, I used to be a student and then I became a junior clerk in the company. Then I became an executive. Now I'm CEO. That is what you did. Those are your titles. We are not asking that. We are asking, who are you? You say, okay. I used to, you know, be suffering, ABC sufferings I had. And then I collected a lot of money. Now I am enjoying joys of TEF. So I was suffering ABC, and now with the money, now I'm enjoying DEF. But those are all, you know, your relationships, those are all things you did. Who is the one that was suffering ABC and who is the one that is now enjoying DEF? That is what we want to know. You have not even understood the question, so how can you give an appropriate answer? That's what happens. So we are all the time told that you are not this body, you are not this mind, you are not this intellect, but you are that Om, that supreme consciousness appearing. And repeatedly, all the Upanishads say that, the Gita says that, all the Acharya. I myself, I probably heard it 10,000 times, but I still have not, I'm still as ignorant as I was. So what happens is that the teacher keeps on telling us, because it is the teacher's experience. We can be told, we can be guided, but ultimately we have to sit and meditate and contemplate and experience that knowledge for ourselves. Who am I? But we find that this absolute truth is very difficult to describe because our limited intelligence cannot understand that. Like somebody says, you know, the budget is deficit is 890 billion. And from this year, it has gone up to 980 billion and is going to approach a trillion. Now, we don't know what is a billion and what is a trillion. You know, 10,000 we can understand. Million, maybe. A billion is 1,000 million. We have no comprehension. 1,000 billion, which is a trillion, our mind, eyes glaze over. I cannot. You see, the budget, I have reduced the deficit from 980 billion to 950 billion. You say, that's good, but we have no idea. Now, the gas price from $3, it went to $4. That we understand very quickly. Why the price of gas has gone up from $3 to $4? See, $3 and $4, we can understand. That is because it, you know, it's our, but whether the oil companies are making from $3 to $4, Chevron made 500 billion or whatever, we don't know. We are, what we are concerned is, what is the price of milk or what is the price of, you know. So these are the things that, so for an average individual, it becomes very difficult to understand this vast concept of this. I'm just talking about the national deficit. Forget about that consciousness, which is beyond all of this. Like they say, the universe is so many trillion miles, so many thousand million light years, and that's where the furthest star and planet is, and the space is goes beyond that, and this consciousness is even beyond that. It's too much, you know. I from my house to Northeast, I can understand. Maybe up to going to New York, I can. But beyond that, how far is India, and then how far is the moon, and how far is the sun? You know, we don't have any of ideas. And Krishna knows that for an average individual, he cannot grasp this huge truth. So what do they do? They make a graph. Like suppose somebody gives you figures, you know, the cost of living is going up. It was this percent and the 4.62, and then this point, this. And after three, four lines, you know, you start, eyes get glazed and you fall asleep. You don't. But if the economist says, okay, I'm making a graph, you know, in the year 2005, the price index was this, and then it went to this, and now it's gone up to this. And inflation, you see now I can understand. You know, why did, and if you are in any science, whether you're in engineering or whether you are in science, you will find that any good speaker, he will not throw a bunch of figures. If he does, he will lose the audience very quickly. So he'll make a graph. Okay, this is going up, prices are going up, or the, you know, economy is going down, the Dow Jones. So when you make a graph or when you make pictures, that's why they say a picture is worth 1,000 words. And that is how even kids learn. Like, you know, you have a 3 or 4 year old child and she goes to school or he goes to school, and he'll come back, you know, and he'll show him A, and he has this book, you know, A to Z. A, apple, and then B, ball, and C, cat. Say, my 4 year old can read. You know, he is a duffer. He can't read anything. All he knows is that from the picture, he knows that A means this is apple. But the parents get very proud. See, my child is reading. See, he'll call all the names. And then they'll say, okay, child, they'll show him fox. Can you read? No, he cannot read because he's still a 4 year old. So similarly, Krishna knows that we are all duffers. We cannot understand this highest truth. So he has created this beautiful picture, which is called the upside down tree. Upside down tree, that is the beautiful picture of the 15th chapter. where through the creation of this picture, he has been able to demonstrate this truth to us. And that is the beauty of this chapter. That's why the 15th chapter is considered as the most, it was Swami Chinmayananda's favorite chapter. It is considered the most mystical of all the chapters. In fact, every Chinmaya mission devotee is expected to memorize that. We have to memorize this chapter, because before every lunch or dinner, if you go to a camp in PRC or any Chinmaya mission activity, before lunch and before dinner, all the devotees take out the paper and chant, and we are supposed to memorize that. So the idea being that this chapter has the essence of this highest knowledge of who is, of course, it starts with what is creation, how the world was created. Then it covers all the paths. It covers the path of detachment, how to detach yourself. It covers the path of bhakti. It covers the path of right action. Then Sri Krishna takes us to who is this jiva, this individual who is born and then is, how does he function in the world, what happens after death. Everything is covered. It's only 20 some verses, I think 22 or some verses. And beautifully, it's 20 verses. And in 20 verses, there is so much material given. Then where can I find God? You want to know where is God? Krishna will tell you, where am I? I am in this, I am in this, I am in this. And the last two or three, verses talks again about this conditioned and unconditioned consciousness. And interestingly, he also says what is the benefit of having this knowledge. So everything is covered in this 20 verses. That's why I'm so blessed that I could share this knowledge and, you know, this study this chapter. And that's why I spent so much time in the introduction, because one has to understand what is the basis of the 15th chapter. Why am I studying it? And what is the goal of studying it? And what is that? So that is why we spent about half an hour or so in covering this chapter. So as we said, beautiful picture is given of the upside down tree. And I would actually request everybody to learn and memorize the 15th chapter. We do have a Gita chanting classes after Aarti, and you're welcome to join. I know some of you do come and sit. And we teach the older children how to chant, and you can sit in the back of the class and with the book and just, you know, chant softly and you can learn. So the idea being that when you memorize the 15th chapter, don't only mechanically memorize, but by know the meaning of that. What am I actually memorizing? Go home and read the commentaries of the Bhagavad Gita that you have, so that when you memorize, you know the meaning, then your mind will be transported into these higher realms of beauty. It's the most, every verse in the Bhagavad Gita is beautiful, but really the 15th chapter is the jewel. It's the most wonderful chapter. So we'll be in the next few months, we'll be covering these. So we'll be starting the first verse today. But does anybody have any comments about this, or any questions, or anything? Disagree or agree with?
That makes you think more. You know, ultimately, it is the supreme.
Mm.
You know, that is what is important. You know, I really like that explanation you made.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's very true. Once you're spiritually evolving, all three fall in line. That's the beauty of this study. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's a good point. Yes. Did you have a comment?
I was going to say that I liked your analogy with the budget and the Gita, because it makes sense. My eyes glaze over too. It's like, so what's a billion? What's a trillion? But it's a good analogy. Thank you.
Yeah. It's all from Swami Chinmayananda's commentary. Okay. None of it is mine. I'm just the messenger. I just read it and listen to his commentary and I just share it. But most of the ideas are from him or from some of the other commentators. I listen to Eknath Ishwar and some of the others, and other acharyas I have heard, but mostly it is Gurudev's. So I always thank him. Yes.
He also said that the mind, if that being the case, how can body, mind, and intellect be fighting with each other when mind is really the controller? Mm.
No, the mind controls the body, that is true. But if the body is unhappy and suffering, the mind cannot be happy. The mind might say, oh, everything is fine. But the body says, I'm hurting. or the intellect says, you know what, I mind is enjoying and having fun, but the intellect says, I wish I was home, you know, studying something useful. So that each one of their goals are different. The mind and intellect control the body, no doubt, but each one has different goals. The body wants to be satisfied in a different way, the mind in a different way, the intellect. So there, each one's desires are different, goals are different. Purpose is,
but
life
cannot
is different.
Be independent when I'm talking about, yeah. They cannot be independent of each other. They will be mutually inclusive.
True, true. That is, you're absolutely right. All three work together, but you cannot satisfy all three, what I'm saying is. One or the other will be always unhappy. And if one of the, in the world, no matter whatever happens, you know, they say, no, nobody can be ever eternally happy. You can never be eternally happy. Sometimes physically something will be wrong, or mentally, or intellectually. Or if nothing else, you know, there is problems in the world. There is so much, you know, conflict. And so all the time, something or the other is disturbing us. Only when you are spiritually progressing, then you develop an equanimity and peace. Your mind becomes more peaceful. That is the idea.